Kyle is a pro at continuing the conversation with prospects. There are so many touch points, it can be hard to keep track while being genuine to your leads. Using tools in your sales process has become non-negotiable, but implementing those tools into your current systems isn't easy. This is where Kyle excels. Kyle is the founder and CEO of SalesLoft, a company that helps businesses move target accounts into customer accounts. In this podcast, Kyle reveals how targeting prospects in your market is changing, ways to start the conversation at top of funnel, tips for implementing tools into your sales stack, and where to start when developing your stack. Hey, everybody, this is Mary Lou Tyler, and today I have a very, very special guest. Kyle Porter, CEO of SalesLoft, is with us on the phone, and I'm very excited about what he's been doing with his company. So rather than, you know, glorify everything about what Kyle has done, I want him to tell us where he's been with the company, where he thinks things are going, and why you should be listening to this call. I mean, I think this is the call for you that's going to really set in motion your ability to predictably generate revenue for yourselves, to make your commissions and do it consistently so that you can scale. Now, Kyle is an expert in many, many areas, and he especially has been focused on top of funnel. Is that correct, Kyle?
That's right.
So although we all get kind of pulled into opportunity to close one, this really is all about how to get those conversations started, but more importantly, how to continue the conversations so that you're reducing lag in the pipeline. So without further ado, Kyle, welcome. So happy to have you on this podcast today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mary Lou. I really appreciate it and super excited about our conversation today.
Perfect. So as I said, I would like you to tell the audience, because, you know, you're a startup, so you had an idea that you took and made just a fabulous product line out of. So what got you started in doing this particular portion of the sales pipeline? Where are you going with that? And how do you see the future for the work that we're doing in business development?
Yeah, sure thing. So let's take a step back just real quick. So I'm the founder and CEO of SalesLoft, started the company in 2011, and we provide an application that helps companies convert target accounts into customer accounts. So just get that out of the way so that you all know kind of my background and where I'm coming from. But I think, Mary Lou, and you alluded to it, and we've talked about it before, we're really in the middle of one of the most profound shifts in business and in the profession of selling, where things are changing so dramatically. And, you know, Andreessen Horowitz, Mark Andreessen wrote a blog post on Wall Street Journal that said software is eating the world. And I've got a daughter, she's 2 years old, baby Brooklyn. And I'm pretty sure when she grows up and gets old enough to understand it, I'm gonna tell her that there are going to be two jobs in the world. One is the jobs that the robots tell you what to do, and the other is the job where you tell the robots what to do. And so we want her to be on the side of telling the robots what to do. We want our customers, we want the world to be on that side of, you know, kind of moving from that industrial age to knowledge worker age. Mm-hmm. And then selling's being disrupted. You know, it's the world's oldest industry. It's the largest industry. If you look at global economies like China, the way you measure them is by GDP. That's just another word for sales. And so this industry that's, you know, it's gotten a lot of management software and a lot of kind of executive level stuff with CRMs and some of the applications that exist, but really the actual function of selling, of connecting with buyers in a human way, of identifying the right companies that are the target accounts and converting those over to customer accounts, that's being revolutionized, and we're kind of sitting right in the middle of that. There's an Albert Einstein quote that says, "The significant problems we face today cannot be solved with the same level of thinking that we were when we created them." And I think that's kind of, you know, a testament to what's going on right now. And so, you know, we see this industry as, you know, marketing's had a lot of technology, but sales has really been operating in an old school fashion. We want to engage our buyers with lots of sincerity, but we also want to be targeted and have a frequency of how we communicate with them. And so that's the shift that we're seeing. And as an executive and founder of SalesLoft, that's kind of right where I sit.
So you mentioned two phrases that are near and dear to my heart. One is targeting, And so let's start with that. What does that mean, and how is that changing?
Well, you know, for companies today, there's a lot more information, data, processes that allow us to identify who are our best customers, which potential prospects would be right for us. And, you know, and it's kind of the opposite of the whole boil the ocean, you know, situation. We as business leaders want to identify who's going to get the most value from our product, service, or offering. And then how do we identify those companies based on data points or specifics of what makes them unique? And so it all starts with targeting. You talk a lot about personas. Personas not only of the actual individual buyer, but also the accounts. So, you know, it's important for companies to understand who are your target accounts and who are the target buyers within those accounts so we don't waste time going after them.
Okay. And, you know, one of the things that there's a new book out, I don't know how relatively new it is, The Challenger Customer. They talk about this new term called a mobilizer, which is a buyer, but it's more of an influencer. So, you know, they have this magic number now. I think it was 5.4, especially when you're going up market. There are more potential people who are going to be sitting around the table or at least involved in the conversation somewhere in relative position of the pipeline. So it's really important that you consider not only the companies, the people within the companies, but not only the ones that are going to actually buy, but those who directly and indirectly influence. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a specific example. I was sitting in a boardroom just last week in Salt Lake City with a big potential account. And we were meeting with the VP of sales, whom we've had a great relationship with and is pretty excited about what we're doing and thinks that we can add significant value to their organization. And in walked the sales operations manager, whom we had spent a little bit of time with but hadn't gone as deep as we had with the VP. Now, the VP's sitting there and he's explaining his excitement around what we're doing, and the sales operations person says, "Well, you know, we're not getting this unless I check it off." And you know, it's interesting because sales operations reports to the VP, doesn't hold the budget, doesn't really have the authority or anything like that, but the VP trusts that person to be their advisor and to be the person that helps make that decision internally. And in fact, the joke was that, you know, the sales ops person said, "This, you know, this VP gets excited about, you know, lots of technology all the time. If we bought all the things that he wanted to buy, then we'd be overloaded, right?" And so it's a you know, specific example of how there are people inside the organization that make a big impact and make a big difference, even though they might not be that ultimate signer that we kind of, you know, back in the old school days of the sales, we always looked out for the person who signs the check. You know, that was the only person we needed to connect with. But it's dead wrong today because, you know, specialization inside the organization, you know, these VPs and line level executives, they may not know tech and integrations and, you know, what's going to work within their process oriented environment nearly as well as the people that are kind of really behind the scenes making all that happen.
Mm-hmm. Great information. Now, the second term that you use that's near and dear to my heart is frequency. Can you elaborate around that, please?
Yeah. You know, we're seeing in the industry that, you know, the companies that are most successful with their sales communications are using this idea of touch points. And we talked about earlier this idea of a cadence of touch points, which are, you know, how many times you're reaching out to your prospect over which mediums. There's also some other elements, you know, kind of one of the strategies we've seen lately, and I'll just kind of standardize it around this idea of a 7x7, 7 touches over 7 days. And some people do 9 touches in 13 days. But we're seeing this a lot with organizations that they create their cadence of touch points. And the variables here are how many touch points over which medium. Is it email? Is it phone? Is it social? Could even be things like direct mail or you know, targeted advertising. Mm-hmm. But then which persona is it to inside the organization? Is it the VP of sales? Is it the sales operations person? And then even another step is which person at your organization is making that connection. We have some strategies here at SalesLoft where the sales development team will reach out to director level accounts and VP level accounts. But then my VP and me will reach out to their CEO and their board members and things of that nature. So it's multi-selling to multi-buyers. But it all wraps around this idea of frequency of touch points, because I think it's Gartner has a report that says that it takes 8 touch points in order to connect with a buyer, but the average company is only doing two per prospect. So there's a gap there, and we need to fill that in with more touch points. But we want to make sure those touch points are sincere and unique and personalized and not just spam blasts.
You know, it's funny, my head's spinning because I'm doing the math in my head, you know, and without technology, Kyle, how can you, let's take that 5.4 number. So we have 5.4 potential prospects that we need to touch, and mm-hmm. we need to touch each of those seven to 10 times. How the heck do we keep all that straight if we're if we're not using a tool? Help me understand that.
You can go to Amazon.com and buy three cases of sticky notes if you want.
Yeah.
That's one option that you can do. Or you can have systems in place. And right. and some companies can do it through real sophisticated kind of CRM adjustments. But those tend to kind of not really get the job done. And then there's products that do it as well. And shameless self-promotion, we have one of those products, but there's other great vendors in the space as well. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why this new tech stack has emerged and why companies like ours are getting lots of funding and having some success in this marketplace.
So now that you open the can of worms about this term stack, it's funny because upmarket accounts, we don't really talk about stack because, as you mentioned with the sales ops guy, we call them tools because uh-huh. it has to go through a process of vetting to make sure that the tool will fit into, you know, the corporate structure, what other tools are involved. So what is the concept of a stack, and tell us where your software, your offering fits within that stack?
Yeah, cool. So I think if you look at the most common sales stacks out in the marketplace, they certainly revolve around a CRM system.
Okay.
Salesforce.com being the most popular of modern cloud-based CRMs. Some of the more kind of, smaller companies have things like HubSpot and Close.io, and then some companies have Microsoft Dynamics, Sugar, a few other ones. But those are some of the most popular ones. And then usually companies have a data layer that's providing data of target accounts and prospects. And that could be like a data.com, discover.org. There's so many of them. Companies like DataNize, bunch of really great companies that are helping pull information in.
Mm-hmm.
Then a lot of companies have LinkedIn. It's almost its own stack layer to find additional intelligence on the people we're calling into. And then there's software for helping you with your email, sales emails, and software helping you with voice and phone dialers. The most popular dialer in the marketplace, maybe an insidesales.com, although we're kind of coming after their business a little bit. and then some of the more modern ones have combined the dialer with the email to complete kind of the sales development or sales communications piece of the stack. And those would be technologies like SalesLoft, like TouTapp, maybe Outreach. Those are some of the competitive players in that space. And I think that kind of makes up the stack. But then there's also tools like Tenderbox for creating presentations, and companies like EchoSign and DocuSign for digital signature, CPQ for configure price quote. So there's a number of them, but those tend to be the core tech products in a modern sales stack.
And it's becoming more best practice too, because I think, especially with the cadence and frequency pieces, you know, people are getting harder to get a hold of. They're not sitting in mm-hmm. their offices waiting for the phone to ring or waiting for you to enlighten them on how great your product is.
So that's right.
You really, and when I worked in the contact center space back in the dark ages, we really worried about something called best time to call. Does the software now that, let's talk SalesLoft, since that's your, bailiwick, that's what you know. Is there ways now to take and leverage the analytics coming out of SalesLoft so that we can maximize the best time to email, the best time to call, and do you do that across the modalities of whatever you're feeding into frequency, you can track metrics around conversion rates?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the big components. Another big component, and I'll dive into the analytics after this, but one of the biggest components is just that accountability piece, right? So mm-hmm. so our software and other software like it can help you tee up the cadence of touch points that you want, and then it holds the rep accountable. We talked about the sticky notes, right? It is that guide that says, oh, you need to make these 3 phone calls or these 40 phone calls or these 20 emails. are these social messages. And it just keeps you on track. It's almost like bumper guards for your sales process. Mm-hmm. But then once you start making those communications, you start sending those emails, leaving those voicemails, having those conversations, then it starts doing things like, say, this is the best time to send emails. This is the best time to make phone calls based on this persona. Here are the best subject lines. Here are the best bodies of emails. Even there's some fun things that you'll love, Mary Lou. I was sitting, I actually work out of our sales development lab, and we've got 16 sales development reps on the phone every day. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking, at first I was kind of grateful that I wasn't making a bunch of cold calls. But then I realized, hey, if I was, what would I say? And it'd be a little different than what my team's saying. I started brainstorming and I thought, you know, I would say some kind of pretty disruptive kind of pattern interrupt type things. Because, you know, these folks are getting a lot of cold calls. I want to surprise them a little bit and start an interesting conversation. And so I started to write these down. And I go, well, it would be really great if we could measure which one's most effective, right? You know, cold call opening, or, you know, a warm intro opening, or whatever it is. And so in our software, we identified three different types of phone call openings. And we recorded them in Salesforce as a drop down list. And the reps started making all the calls. And what they would do inside of SalesOft is they would record which opening they use. Just a drop down. Hey, when I make the call in the phone dialer workflow, just click the drop down. And then what happened is, after we ran a bunch of these phone calls, we were able to see which one created the most meaningful conversations. And we were able to run an analysis. And interestingly enough, it was one of the kind of cute pattern interrupt type approaches. Now, it wouldn't work forever because, you know, eventually people would get wind of it. But the cold call was, hey, Mary Lou, this is Kyle Porter from SalesLoft. What did I catch you in the middle of?
Oh, sounds like you're.
People would be taken back a little bit, and they'd say, oh, well, you know, I'm kind of doing this. You know, what's up? And then you'd be like, well, I'm calling because of, you know. Yeah. And we saw that it had a lot more effectiveness than, hey, Mary Lou, this is Kyle Porter from SalesLoft. We can help your reps convert more target accounts into, you know, customer accounts through communication. Like, right. You know, it's not all about us and kind of pitchy and salesy. It's just kind of, you know, more relaxed and interruptive. And so we were able to measure that was more effective. Now, over time, we would measure it against other things and make sure we're always innovating. But yeah, time of day to phone call, time of day to email, how many, you know, which cadence is most effective? Mm-hmm. Is it more effective to make 3 emails and 2 phone calls than 2 emails and 3 phone calls, or whatever it is? And so, yeah, all those analytics, if you have a system that captures your communication, then you can also have a system that analyzes it and creates insights based on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I was just at a conference in New York City that I helped with the workshop. One of the most frequent questions we got in our workshop was, how do I set up a cadence? Or what should I email, then phone, or phone, then email, or this and that, and these and those? And it was just like, you know, it really depends.
That's right.
It really depends. You got to start somewhere, though. So I love the fact that you have that in your tool. And what I want the audience to recognize is that it's in the tool, but you can optimize it. You constantly iterate it. You don't set it and forget it. You're constantly looking at it in order to be able to reduce the lag in the pipeline. Because I don't know if you all remember, but page 42 of Predictable Revenue, there's a formula on that page. And I have been pretty much the last 5 or 6 years focusing on that as my thesis. And one of the parameters in that formula is reduction of lag. So the frequency that Kyle has implemented in his software offering allows you to start reducing that lag, because you're going to know the shortest path to a meaningful conversation. And then from that meaningful conversation, getting them through to the fit call and then generating an opportunity.
Yeah. You know, you hit the nail on the head. It's different data for different companies. So I can't sit up and tell you that, you know, Wednesday at 9 a.m. is the best time to call somebody. And I can't tell you that phone is more effective than email. I can tell you that if you're selling to VPs of social media at technology companies, you better be touching them on social, right? You better be touching them on Twitter and Instagram, right? But if you're selling to, commercial construction general contractors, I doubt they need you to Snapchat them, right? You know, you're probably going to be text messaging and phone calling, right? Yeah. And so it all depends on that persona and who you're selling to. But if you have a system that allows you to measure it, then you have a system that allows you to know what's right for your business in your particular instance.
Exactly. So, Kyle, now people are sitting here thinking, okay, this is really cool. How do they get started? What do they need to do to be able to sort of figure out, is this something that could be helpful to me? What do you usually tell clients or prospects of yours in order to prepare for putting in a tool like a Sales Loft tool?
Well, you know, I recently pre-ordered a book that comes out in August, and I think they may want to pay attention to that one. You know, I'm super excited about it. You know, certainly every time we talk, I'm energized and excited, and I learn new things, and so I can't wait to read Predictable Prospecting. But you know, there's lots of great resources out there. There's great resources at Topo. It's a research and advisory business that you might know about. They've got some cool stuff. You know, we put a bunch of things on our blog to help. We've got a playbook called the Sales Development Playbook that we share for free, and anyone can get their hands on it. And it really outlines a lot of these areas that can be helpful to you. And, you know, there's just great information. And then, you know, once you've got some ideas on what you want to accomplish, start to roadmap out your process. And then, you know, start looking at some of the software that exists in the marketplace and see if there's some of that that fits you. You know, I don't want to say go out and just buy it, but you know, certainly you want to evaluate what's on the market. It'll help you be a better seller, help you be more modern and understand technology, and, you know, help you understand how the fastest growing technology companies in the world are depending on sales communications product in addition to their CRMs.
Right. And the other thing to let everyone know is that the portion of the pipeline that Kyle specializes in is reaching out to people. It's not waiting for people to come in necessarily. So he's very proactive in the work that he does. And that is the channel that will allow you to have more predictability, because you are the one who's targeting these people. You are the one who's reaching out with a message that resonates and that instills a sense of urgency in them so that they will want to contact you back. It doesn't mean that it replaces attraction-based marketing or, you know, getting people to fill out a form or do all the other stuff they do to get inbound to you, but it does allow you to be able to mold where you want to position your product in the marketplace, how often you want to have new clients come into the fold, and then be able to scale that so that your forecasts are a lot more predictable.
That's right. You know, another thing when you talk about inbound, so SalesLoft gets 2,000 inbounds a month, and we generate just as much revenue with outbound as we do with inbound. But I'll tell you what, one of the biggest lessons I've learned here is that someone will come to your website, to our website, raise their hand, ask for a review, a product capabilities overview, fill out the form, and then they won't respond to our first two or three phone calls and emails. So guess what? They're going on cadences, right? You know, if they're going on a cadence just like an outbounder will. And then the other thing is that most of the time, and if I look back historically at all of our inbounds, most of the time it is not one of the core decision makers of those 4.5 people that are, you know, buyers at each of these organizations. And so for every inbound lead we get, we quickly analyze who else at the organization should we contact. And those people go on our cadences as well. And that's what we're seeing with great businesses out in the industry, is that they are generating tons of inbound leads and they're also doing lots of outbound, but they treat the inbounds like outbounds when they come in, and that helps you be most effective all the way around.
Right. So in my terminology, for those of you who follow predictable revenue and predictable prospecting, what Kyle's saying is when it comes into what we call working status, it doesn't matter the source of the lead, whether it came from inbound, direct mail, trade show, it doesn't really matter, but it goes through the process that an outreach would go through, which is working that lead, looking at that bullseye of direct and indirect influencers, getting them into a touch sequence with the idea and the goal to qualify them for fit and get them towards opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. And you have different cadences for different personas.
Right.
So a trade show lead might have a, you know, 6-step cadence. An inbound, you know, someone who downloaded ebook might have a 5-step cadence, and then an outbound may have a 12. You know, it's different depending upon that persona. And then again, you can use math to determine which one's most effective.
Right. And without a tool, for those of you who are math majors out there, it would be crazy to try to keep track of this in something like just a CRM, or like Kyle said, I envision a sticky note wall. Just like, it'd be crazy. I mean, if you had four accounts you were working on, maybe, but.
Well, you know, it's certainly becoming the rise of the salesperson that not only understands, you know, human interaction, but also does understand process and technology and a little bit of math, not a lot of math, but, you know, enough math to understand kind of the equation of connection.
Right.
But, you know, one of our shared friends, Jeremy, Jeremy Donovan of GLG, they don't have, their reps aren't going after too many accounts, mm-hmm. But yet they have lots of cadences because they have so many different personas at those organizations and lots of different touch points that they're going over. And Jonathan's obviously your co-author on the book, mm-hmm. Which makes you even more excited to check it out. Only 20 accounts, but, you know, 30 cadences at times.
Yes. And a lot of my clients, because I am an upmarket person, have 100. That's it. 100 clients mm-hmm. that they're going after, but they are very large clients, or they're clients that are distributed globally. So they need to be able to touch Europe. They need to be able to touch Canada. They need to be able to touch US. So it, you know, at the end of the day, it's like a lot of small accounts, but it's rolled up into one. So it's still the same process, and it has to be done in a way that, as you said, is respectful, authentic, meaningful, so that you can split test and try different things to make sure that you're constantly iterating to get the best conversation and reduce that lag from that formula so that the pipeline is more predictable.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of one last thing I'll add on that is, you know, one of the biggest shifts we've seen and probably one of the things that's changed maybe the most since predictable revenue is, you know, you all did such a great job of distributing that the process and idea to the world that, you know, a lot of people have adopted it. And what it's done now is it's opened up an opportunity for sellers to differentiate themselves by becoming even more personalized and customized in their mm-hmm. communications.
Right.
And so we find that the best companies now in modern revenue generation, they're not just looking at how many companies did they reach. They're actually focusing on the top of the funnel conversion of companies prospected to companies connected with, right? Mm-hmm. So if I've got two sellers, let's say, you know, Bob and Kelly, and Bob reaches out to 1,000 accounts to get 10 appointments or to get 10 qualified opportunities, but Kelly reaches out to 100 accounts to get 10 opportunities, Kelly is much more effective than Bob.
Yep.
She's more scalable. She's more dependable. She's less cost. She's more cost effective. And if you fall, you know, most people have CRM rules that say, you know, if they've been touched in the last 15 days or so, no one else on the sales team can reach them.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob just ate up 990 accounts that no one else can touch for the next 15 days, whereas Kelly only, you know, locked up 90.
Right.
And so I think that's a big one. And I know that you've talked a lot about that is, you know, being effective with your communications is super critical now as well.
Yeah, quality over quantity has always been the message, even with predictable revenue. Unfortunately, predictable revenue was in some places is taken as a spammer, you know, kind of effect where you just spray and pray. And that is really not the idea behind predictable revenue. It's always been about quality. Mm-hmm. It's always been about meaningful conversations. So I'm really excited what you're doing, and it's just raising the bar to be able to be more authentic, to be able to reach people with meaning. And that's what it's all about now. You know, we have the tools, we have the technology, let's be human.
Yeah. And people are always going to try to take the easy road out, right? Like, you know, like the volume stuff, but you know, it's just like anything. If it's worth having, it's worth, you know, putting in the hard work. And I think, one of my friends, a guy, you know, John Barrows, he has this idea that, you know, it's really, we're kind of entering the era of the death of the average salesperson,
mm-hmm.
Because if a robot can do it, then we don't need you, you know, and robots can do decent job of communication, not a great job. They can do a decent job. And if you can only do a decent job as a seller, then, you know, your future may look bleak. And so this whole idea of, you know, advanced personalization, really understanding your buyer, connecting at a human level, picking the right companies that you have, you know, kind of mathematical assumption that can be, you know, get value from your solution. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, a lot of this stuff really makes up the next generation of selling and is some really cool stuff that you're all over and I'm excited to talk with you about.
Yeah, that's great, Kyle. Well, listen, I don't want to take any more of your time. I know you've got a busy day. So How do people reach you? What's the best way to start a conversation with you around this topic or anything related to sales?
Yeah, sure. My email address is just kyle@salesloft.com. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much respond to every email. So look forward to chatting with anyone who's on here today. And then you can find me on Twitter as well. I'm just @KylePorter. So if you're into Twitter, I'll be happy to communicate with you there. And, just so honored to be here today. And when I started the company, we had really nothing, but we had your book. So you've been a role model of mine, and your influence and thought leadership has been, really at the forefront of our business. And so we owe you a lot. And this industry in general is really doing some amazing things. And, this top of the funnel momentum represents the biggest innovation happened to selling in the last decade. And it's an honor to be here with you as we discuss it, and an honor to have listeners that are right in the middle of it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kyle. I really appreciate
that.
You're
very welcome.
Hey, listen, everybody, follow Kyle on Twitter because he does post a lot of great content. And that's another way to get the latest and greatest news coming out of not only SalesLoft, but what's going on in the industry. So make sure you follow him as well, okay? All right, Kyle, well, thanks again. I really appreciate your time.
Awesome, Mary Lou. Thank you very much.